We were on the Gemara on the bottom of Ches Amud Aleph. Gemara says, four lines from the bottom, Rabba Rima Tzedaka Ayasame Debe Bar Meryon. So Rabba imposed a tzedaka obligation on the Yesomim of Bei Bar Meryon. Now understand that I guess it's the most fundamental yesod about Hilchos Tzedakah, and I said this some of you heard me say this. In English, the translation of tzedakah is charity, which is a mistranslation. Tzedakah is not charity. Charity comes from the Latin word caritas, which implies the goodwill of the heart, which means that when you're moved by matters. Tzedakah comes from the root tzedek. It's justice. It's not because I feel, it makes me feel good, I feel generous, my heart is moved. Tzedakah is justice. This, I have said many times, is reflected in the difference between the way shuls fund themselves and many churches fund themselves. Shuls, you pay membership dues. And that, in fact, is whether or not, well, the way it's structured isn't maybe always the right way, but principally speaking, the fact that you pay dues, maybe it should be tied to a person's wealth and ability. I mean, it always is if someone can't afford it in most shuls, but whether it should be graduated as opposed to related to one's income as opposed to a fixed sum, you could debate that point, but fundamentally the obligation of some kind of an assessment, a mandatory assessment, is in fact the Torah way of doing things. The limitations that Bati Knesset have is because joining a shul is essentially voluntary and we don't not allow someone to daven because they're not a member of the shul. It's trickier, but we use things like Yom Menorah and seats, access to the Chevra Kadisha for free, and things like that. I know that, I don't know if every shul, I know that my shul in Dinek, if you're not a member, or you're not a member of a shul that has a relationship with us, you can go, our Chevra Kadisha doesn't take care of your mace. There are people who do this for pay. The shul office will give you a phone number. That's the way it works. You want to be part of a tzibur, and you want to have the benefits of being part of a tzibur, you have to be part of a tzibur. Many churches, I don't know if this is more in that Protestant as opposed to the Catholic Church, I suspect, they send around a collection plate, and it's Ishlefi Nidvas Liba. Right? That is reflective of charity in a different way. Torah values dictate that charity is not charity, but it's tzedakah. It's a basic obligation. And the outcome of that is that we are ma'asin al tzedakah, as we're going to see the Gemara on Ches Amud Beis. Is that Gadol Ma'asa Yosef and Osa, that greater is the person who badgers people into giving the tzedakah than even the person who actually gives the tzedakah. But we are Ma'asin al tzedakah. We assess members of the community. When we learn the laws of Kupa and Tamchoi, it's based on the part of it. It's considered Dinei Mamonos in many ways. People are expected to pay according to what their means are, and it's mandatory. It's not optional. Right? A Torah true community funds its institutions not the way we do, let's say, you know, with our yeshivas, with a tuition model pay-as-you-go, but rather it's a communal obligation. There are certain very small number of groups, you know, Hasidic groups, where it really is funded almost all that way, and there are occasional communities where it moves a lot in that direction. But fundamentally speaking, the way we do it is improper from a Torah perspective, casting the burden upon every single family in accordance with whatever number of children in the school, and a particular price on the head of a child. That is not a Torah way of doing things. It is reflective of being, you know, of another culture, a foreign culture, but it has very much infiltrated our way of thinking. Historically speaking, it really was never like that. When Yeshua ben Gamla instituted the Gemara, we'll learn, God willing, later in the year, Yeshua ben Gamla instituted his Milan Beit Tinochus. He's the first institutionalized, you know, yeshiva day school system. Said it wasn't that the parents had to pay the tuition, but it was the community was responsible for implementing a system where it was available for people whose parents didn't have or the wherewithal to teach them Torah one way or the other, right?
Is the sort of communal obligation to support those in need distinct from the obligation to give tzedakah to an aid that's our master for you?
Correct. I mean, there are different aspects of tzedakah, right? Someone asked me, Shaila, literally last night, they sent me a bunch of Hilchos Tzedakah Shailas. The question was, if you question how much are you supposed to give, how is that calculated? And then, are you supposed to give it in, you know, is there a way, a time are you supposed to give it? So my answer to that question is the following. Said you set aside stuff over the course of the year, however you do that. It's interesting how things have changed. I think the way we handle money, because it's all paper, I don't mean dollar bills, but they're all digital in many ways, probably changes the way we relate this. But people used to have literally some box where they would, when they would make money, they would put some little way as miser. And so the obligation of distributing that miser, or even separating in the first place, is not a time-bound issue. But there is, if an ani comes to you, the Torah says, lo sikpotsa se'alkom echichliyam, there's an isur kitsa se'abita lo saseh. And therefore, then there becomes an obligation, whatever the level of obligation in giving to a particular ani, the Gemara is going to talk about that a little bit, of how that obligation plays out. But then that's a specific time. Otherwise, you put the money aside and you give it when you give it. Right? It's a good idea, as with everything. Now, as with the shita of the Meiri, that the reason why, at least according to the Tanaim who say that man is judged all year, why do we have every day? Rabbi Yossi says, Adam Nidon B'Choyom, the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, the first parent. So Adam Nidon B'Choyom, so why do you have Yom Narayim? What's the significance of Rosh Yom Kippur? So the Meiri says it very much, the Havlah, but at least for Rabbi Yossi, he says, that's very clear, that basically, yeah, there is no significance really, Rosh Yom Kippur, but if we didn't put something on the calendar, then we would never do it. Right? If you don't, we know we have to do tshuva, right? But if you know that anything that has no time at the end of it, it gets on your to-do list, and then I don't get to it today, so it's manana, and it's manana. So that's why, according to Rabbi Yossi, you need Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur set aside by Chazal as a time of tshuva, because otherwise it would just wind up in the background, you just would never get to it. So it's a good idea for your tzedakah also to have, you know, times that people often do before Yom Narayim, before Yom Tov. You should have times on your calendar every few months or something where you can distribute the tzedakah. But that's separate from when an ani is shoal ba-Pesach, so then you have to respond then. Okay. So the Gemara says that Rabba was Ramat Staka, he literally cast. Ramat, the Aramaic translation of the word Lahashlich, Shin Lamechav, to cast upon. It means he assessed Staka on the Yisomim. So Amalei Abayev, Hatani Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, in Poskin Staka Le Yisomim, Afilu Lepidyon Shvuyim. Even for the redemption of captives, you're not allowed to assess the Yisomim and make them pay Staka. So, and even and apparently when you say Afilu Lepidyon Shvuyim, the Gemara is going to take off on this, tells you what might be the highest level of tzedakah. So Amar Lei, Rabbah said to Abaye, who was his Talmud, Ana la'ach shuvinu ka'avidna. No, I'm doing it not because I want to assess them, but because, and Rashi doesn't explain anything, but basically it's for their own benefit that I'm doing it. In other words, for their social standing, it's for their benefit that they pay something into this. It's not because so much we're forcing them to pay, because there's an obligation and everybody has to contribute. It's because it will wind up being to their benefit to contributing to this fund, in terms of, let's say, their social standing. Okay. So now, Gemara tells a story. Ifra Hormuz Ime the Shurmalka. So Ifra Hormuz, whoever she was the queen mother, I guess it's called, of Shurmalka, who's some Persian king that makes his appearances in the Gemara. Shadra Arnika de Dinari Lekame de Rabbi Yosef. She sent a purse of dinarim to Rabbi Yosef, and Amra Levi in a mitzvah rabba. She said this should be used for a big mitzvah. A big mitzvah. So the Gemara later, Rashi later is going to talk about it. Tosfos talks about it, and he talks about it here. Now they talk about later, a daf later, about being mekabel tzedakah min hagoy. That's a topic we're going to talk about. And being mezakeh hagoy. The Oved Avodah Zarah, maybe that's not a good thing. The Gemara will talk about it later. But in the meantime, Rabbi Yosef, for whatever reason, decided that he was going to accept, or he was going to, or he had to accept this tzedakah. And now, the donor had made a request. The donor's request was, I want it to be for a mitzvah rabba. So Yosef Rav Yosef v'kama ayin ba, he was analyzing this. My mitzvah rabba. What's a mitzvah rabba? So Amar le Abaye, midetani Rav Shmuel bar Yehuda, in poskin tzedakah le'isom, afilu l'pidyon shvuyim, that's that the braisa of Shmuel bar Yehuda, a few l'pidyon shvuyim, sishmamina, pidyon shvuyim, mitzvah rabbi. Pidyon shvuyim is the biggest mitzvah. Tosas here raised an interesting question. The Gemara Megillah, in the beginning of the fourth parak, says that you're not allowed to sell a sefer Torah el alumo Torah lisa isha. And the Gemara doesn't mention pidyon shvuyim. Could you sell a sefer Torah for pidyon shvuyim? You might remember on the Gimel Adalat Amid Beis, we had the discussion about when you're building a Beis HaKnesses, and you can't take down one until you build the other. And the Gemara said that what happens if the bricks are ready, what if the money is raised, and the Gemara note says, we're afraid that's not good enough, it has to be built. We're afraid that the Pidyon Shvuyim is going to come up, and they're going to take that money and use it for the Pidyon Shvuyim, and it won't be available for the Beis HaKnesses. Or they're going to sell the bricks and the wood and all the building materials, And then the Gemara said, yeah, what if they still built the Beis HaKnesses? What then? So the Gemara suggests, basically the in shalom is out. The person's not going to sell his house. And the Tosfos here says, what about selling the Sefer Torah for it? So Tosfos suggests that maybe it's so obvious the Gemara and Megillah didn't need to state that you're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim. So now the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, the Rabba Bar Mari, Minoha Milsa Damar Rabban and the Pidyon Shvuyim Mitzvah Rabbi. How do we know that? How do they know? So Amar Lei, Dichsiv Ayati Amru Elecha Ananetze. Yirmiyo Hanavi is told by God to tell the people, go out. You may as well abandon Jerusalem. That didn't make him very popular with the nobility, because effectively it was giving up hope. So what the people say? Where we should? What you supposed to say? Say. So they'll say, where should we go? So Amar Talaim Ko Amar Hashem Asher LaMavis LaMavis Asher LaCherev LaCherev Asher LaRav LaRav Asher LaShvi LaShvi. So basically, you should tell them to go out and meet their fates. So their fates were Mavis, the way I understand the Gemara would be called sudden death, and then there's Cherev, which is also sudden death, but by the sword as opposed to self dying. And then there's Ra'av, death by hunger. And then there's captivity. Shavi. So V'am Rav Yochanan kol ha'mu'uchar b'pasuk zeh, kosha mechaver. The further you get in the pasuk, the worse the punishment it is. So the Gemara explains, Cherev kosha mimavis. Dying by the sword is worse than dying just very quickly, but not by the sword. Ibai, how do you know that? It's a funny way of saying it. Ibai seima cry, Ibai seima cry, Ibai seima svara, Ibai seima svara, ha kaminavel, ha lo kaminavel. One of them is more desecrated than a dead person when you're all sliced up. Right? A person, I've never had to see this, but you can talk to Chever Kadisha people. When someone's been in an accident and dies in an accident, it's just awful. The Tara is awful. As opposed to someone who just, you know, dies on their bed, whatever they die of. So, for the nivel of the body, the mace, that's why Cherev is worse. V'ibay is ema kra, yakar be'inei Hashem hamavsa lachasidav. Mavis is the most precious thing for God for his chasidim, the way they should die. Okay, then the Gemara says, ra'av kashem echerev, hunger, dying by hunger is worse than dying by the sword. I didn't need a pasuk for this, and I could have figured out the svara, but nonetheless, ibay seima cry, ibay seima svara, ibay seima svara. By the way, just a note here. You'll notice that I'm filling in based upon the Bach. How did the Bach know to fill in? He might have had manuscripts, but in this case, you don't need the manuscripts. You could fill this in yourself, because the Gemara's language is going to be parallel. Right? So in the previous part, it was ibay seima cry, ibay seima svara, ibay seima svara. It's chiastic in how it's done. The Gemara doesn't always do it that way. Sometimes it does ABAB, sometimes it does ABDA. The Rishonim would talk about this, because when the Gemara says lo kasha, hub X, hub Y, which is which, and which structure is the Gemara using? So that's why the Bach fills in the letter Aleph. Ibo yisei mekra, ibo yisei besvar, ibo yisei besvar, hai kamistar, hai lo kamistar, ibo yisei mekra, tovim hayucha lecher mechal le ra'ov. That's the pasuk from Eicha, but the svara is obvious. It's better to die quickly than to die prolonged suffering. And then shvi kasha mikulam, dechulu isnube. The way Rashi says, because basically that your captors do whatever they want to you, they kill you whatever they want, they may leave you alive while and then kill you, and therefore Shevi is worse than anything else. One might say that part of what makes Shevi worse than anything else is the anxiety that's associated with it. The person never knows what's going to happen. They kill you, but Shevi is worse. Okay? There may be other considerations as well, which is one of the things that can happen in Shevi is torture. Torture because somebody thinks they can get information from you, which generally speaking is not the case. And some of you may know that one of my favorite lines ever of the late, sorely missed, departed Republican Senator John McCain, who I think we desperately miss, who apparently, when he was tortured by his Vietnamese captors into revealing the names of the people in his unit, just listed them the members of the Green Bay Packers offensive line, and that was sufficient for them. So putting that aside, a lot of torture is not even to get information, it's just sadistic behavior. So much so it's worth noting, there is a sheet that we don't pass in that way, there's a sheet in the Kubesis in Ksubos, who said, the Gemara in Ksubos on Daf Lamed Dalet says that Ilmolei Nogdu Alachanani Mishal Vezai, you have a Pochem Latzalma. They only, instead of Nebuchadnezzar throwing them into the Kivshan Eish, to worship as Avodah Zarah, which they refused to do, if instead he had tortured them, they would have worshipped the Avodah Zarah. So the Rishonim asked, what do you mean? But if he had tortured them, it still was Aser. So what do you mean if they had only, Umalei Nagdu Alachanani Mishal Vezai, you have a Pochem Latzalma? It was Aser. So there are several Teirusim. Rabbi Tam says, because the Tzelem really wasn't a Avodah Zarah. It was only a Maris Ayin issue, so they really, Medina could have worshipped it, they chose to be Mekadosh Shem Shemayim. And others say, no, it's not that it's mutter, it's just that's what happens when you torture people. They're going to do whatever you want them to do at some point because it's so awful. And then there's a Sheikh in the Kubetzas who claims that even though we say that when it comes to Avodah Zarah, Yehari Gayavar, that's only if they're going to kill you. But if they're going to torture you, torture is worse, and you're not Mechuyev to be Moser yourself to torture, and instead you'd be allowed to worship the Avodah Zarah. That's what it says in the Sheikh in the Kubetzas. We don't paskin that way, but there is actually such a Sheikh, and we show them based upon that Gemara. So, Shevi is Kasha Mikulam. Okay. This, I'm not going to talk about it today, but this this statement of the Gemara has broad implications for certain basic issues in our society of our penal system. And I'm not going to, I do plan to talk about it at some point over the coming months. But when we approach things in society, and I said this before and I will say it a million times more, we are supposed to bring the value system of Torah to bear when we interact with society. It doesn't mean we try to enforce every one of our particular mitzvos. That is not actually the case. But in terms of the broader value system of Torah, our obligation is to shout that from the rooftop, because that's not just for Jews. That's a way of how we're supposed to construct a just world. Gemara continues. Back to Hilchos Tzedaka. Very important. Tana Rabbanan. Kupa shel tzedaka migbeis b'shnayim u'mischalekes b'shlosha. A kupa, I mentioned to you, I think, earlier this week. Kupa and tamchoy, I think I did. Kupa was the collection of keash on a weekly basis for feeding the local aniyim. Tamkoy was the collection plate of food, which we went on every day to get food to feed primarily the aniyim who came from outside, who were passing through. So the Mishnah says, kupa is nigbeis b'shtayim, it's collected by two people, u'mischalekes b'shlosha. When you divide up the money and the kupa to the aniyim, three people. Gemara's going to explain why in a second. Tamkoy, She'ein and nigbeis b'shnayim, you need to have two people collect it, and collecting, by the way, implies it's not just that to be gobe something, to collect alone doesn't mean, you know, that you come and voluntarily pay. To be gobe means to collect even though the person doesn't want to pay. So the kupas nigbeis b'shnayim, the Gemara says, she'ein osin sroros al tzibur pachos mishnayim. You can't appoint sroros over the tzibur if there aren't two people involved. It's got to be at least a mini committee. We're going to talk about sroros in a moment. But apparently, collecting for the kupa is not the nemamanos. It doesn't require a bezdin, three, because the amount was known in advance. I don't know if the amount was known in advance because you already gotten your assessment from the town that said, this is your kupa contribution every week based upon your current, 1040. I'm not sure exactly, but apparently it was known. Then the Gemara says that tamchoi, amitzhalekas b'shlosha ki dine mamanos. And I might add, just al derech melitza, the distribution of the kupa funds wasn't only dine mamanos, it's dine nefashos as well. It's dine mamanos in the sense that you're distributing money. It's certainly dine mamanos. But for the people who are receiving it, it's dine nefashos. I know from people who sit on yeshiva scholarship committees that what they're doing is dine nefashos. It really is lives of the people who are involved. And when you give, if you don't give enough to a family, it's nefashos mamish. And I should add, giving too much to one family is also means you're not going to have enough for another family. So the Gemara says that here, technically, because it's money distribution, you're not actually lining up somebody in front of a firing squad and killing them, it's dine mamanos. When you distribute it, therefore you require three people there. Tamchoy, nigbeis b'shlosha, mischalekes b'shlosha. Tamchoy is collected with three people and divided with three people. The Gemara says, shegivuya v'chiluka shavin, because its collection and its distribution are basically done at the same time. At the kupa, you collect once a week, and you distribute it at some other point during the week. The way Rashi explains, the kupa, because you're already doing it, because you're going to collect it and then distribute it immediately, and you need three people for the distribution, if it's tircha not to have the three people there already, it's going to be hard. Most Rishonim, I think, don't read the way Rashi does. They read that kibuya v'chiluka shavin means they both have the status of dinei mamonos, because even the amount that you collected for tamchoy wasn't a fixed amount. It wasn't pre-known, so the people collecting it have to render a decision how much food you have to give today into the tamchoy. And therefore, it's also dine mamas. Kibuy v'chiluka shavin, not in time, but actually in status. Okay, so then the Gemara says, tamchoy b'chol yom, kupa me'erev Shabbos le'erev Shabbos. Tamchoy laniye olan, kupa laniye ha'ir. V'rashayim b'nei ha'ir lasos kupa tamchoy v'tamchoy kupa, They're allowed, if the Bnei Ha'ir decide they need to move funds from one stock account to the other, or in the Shanos Lechom Ashayirtu of the needs of the city, they're permitted to do that. There's a big machlokas here between Rabbeinu Tam and the Rimi Gash. Tosis obviously doesn't quote the Rimi Gash, but the other Rishonim do. Rabbeinu Tam held that there was a great degree of flexibility even from tzedakah funds. In other words, even if they were given for kupa tamchoy and you don't need them right now, they could be used to pay for the shomrei ha'ir. And they have to be tzarchei tzibur. But not, even though the kupa tamchoy originally intended for the aniyim, they can be used for other things. One point which is not explicitly articulated in Tosis here, or in the Gemara here, but will be later. The premise behind this almost certainly is that the people who give it entrust the Bnei Ha'ir to make certain kinds of decisions. And they give it for this purpose, but they're okay in principle that if it's needed for a different purpose, and that's what the Bnei Ha'ir says, and it's not needed for this, that's okay. And it's based upon this, the Gemara in Arachin says that you're not allowed to be Mishana certain things, and at all, because it's being violating the intent of the donor. I think it is pretty clear in halacha that when the donor is absolutely clear in their intent what the money is to be used for, you're not allowed to use it for anything else. The machlokas, Rabbi Natan and Migash, is either to how broadly we interpret the intent of the donor when they gave it to this, or perhaps other issues in Hilchas Taka, to what extent, let's say, the Aniyim or Zocha, once it's been given to their funds, and it can't be used for other general funds. Even though it's a mitzvah, it's Tzarchei Tzibor, nonetheless, it can't be done. So you should be aware there's a major machlokas. Yitzchak? So that, you're correct. It was a guy who actually gave a menorah to the shul. So the question is, how to understand, how broadly should that be construed, is what the Rishonim are discussing. It's the Gemara in Arachin Davav that Tosfos quotes it right here. Okay. So the Gemara now says, and this now has moved away from just tzedakah. It's now talking about the powers of community. The Rashoin Bnei Ha'ir Lasos Kupatam, Rashoin Bnei Ha'ir Lahasos Alamidos, the members of the city, this is not surprising, are allowed to set the weights and measures that you would expect. And then, they're allowed to establish wages for Poalim. Now, it's kind of funny. There's a line in one of the Mishnah, I forget who said this, Rashi say it, you know, to say that you can't charge more than X for this. Today, I don't think that would be the issue that we would have. Today, the equivalent, the relevance of Gemara is that the Bnei Ha'ir are allowed to establish a minimum wage. They can establish a minimum wage. They can establish a maximum wage. And then, ulahasiya al kitzasan, they are allowed to punish people who violate the rules. So if there's a rule that was made up by the city about how, who gets to sell what when, and someone violates it, you can institute kitzas against that person. So now the Gemara says, Amar Mar, Ein Osin Svaro Salatzibur Pachos Mishraim. Right? So Amar Mar means we've had a long brisa, and now we're going to pick it apart, often piece by piece. So you're not allowed to make Svaro Salatzibur Pachos Mishraim. You know how many? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Krav, Ehim Yechuas Asahav Esatchelas Vasar Gaman. So when they gave the workers in the Mishkan the money to bake the stuff with, it was always Ehim Yechuas Asahav. Now, how is that a Svaro the Gemara won't explain? But the Gemara will explain in a second, how is collecting staka a Svaro? And if I go around and I say, please give me the money, and he gives me money, how's that a Svara? The Gemara will explain now. The first thing the Gemara says, Svara su de lo avde. The limitation, the reason why you need two people is because you can't have a Svara. It's not kavarat tzibur. To have someone in a position of Svara when there aren't two people on the job. However, ha-hemune meheman. It's not about nemonas, that we don't trust one person. It's that there's an exeris of custom, you need two people. So the Gemara says, b'sayei l'rabi chanina, dam rabi chanina, masa umina rabi shnei achmer la kupa. Once Rebbe appointed two brothers to handle the kupa. So from the perspective of Neimanus, well, you could imagine two brothers would connive and they would engage in maybe fraudulent behavior. But obviously, these two brothers were obviously tzaddikim, and Rebbe knew that they were trustworthy, and since there were two of them, it was mutter. This does not mean, by the way, that's good public policy. It's terrible public policy, but it doesn't mean there are individual situations where you need to do something and it might be appropriate. Elimelech? Sorry?
Is this where Levin brothers were established?
Okay. You mean Goldman Sachs was better because it was two different people, not related. Okay. Now, the Gemara asks the question, Maestra Rusa, What's the svara involved? So I think this is actually a very important point. You see it from the Gemara here, it's pretty beferish, and you'll also see it if you look in the Menosei Kelim in Hosha Mishpat, I believe, Simon Ches. The definition of srara and what constitutes a srara is quite clear, which is the Amar of Nachman, Amar Bavua, Lefishim and Mashkin, Alat Stokav, Afilu Be'er Shabbos. You can be, a person doesn't want to give what they're supposed to give, and they can. You're not going to, they can't, they're not going to do it, but if they're supposed to give this money they have, if they don't want to give it, you take a mashkon. It means enforcement. If you have powers of kfiya over somebody else, that's called a srara. The reason why that's relevant is because when something entails srara, a ger is not allowed to have srara. The Gemara in Kiddushin on Daf Ayin Vav Amud Vez, I believe, quotes a drasha, Som Tosim Alach HaMelech Miker Vachecha. Ger can't be a melech, and Som Tosim L'Rabos Kol Mesimos. All Mesimos, all appointments of authority. But an appointment of authority of srara means you have powers of kfiya over somebody else. If you don't have the power to enforce anything of anybody else, that's not called a srara. I think that's very, very clear from the Gemara here. And you look in the notes, they came in Choshe Mishpat Simbeches, where it comes up, the issue of the ger is a dayan, it's very close to srara. Alter?
So would it be okay for a ger to be a rabbi?
So that's not a simple question. If you ask me, I think that most situations, there may be exceptions, most situations of pulpit rabbis, I'm not convinced that there's actual srara there. A mashkiach and a yeshiva. I understand that, but remember, Rabbi Moshe wrote that tshuva also 60 years ago, and the role of a rabbi has changed. I think people used to once upon a time have much more respect for the rabbanim in their shuls, and rabbis had much more. The line between power and influence is often blurred. That I think that rabbis often had. You know, can a rabbi have a congregant thrown out of the shul? 60 years ago, I'm willing to bet it was much more likely. I could be wrong. Much more likely the case than now. But as someone once commented. The difference between the shul president and the shul rabbi is that the rabbi gets paid to be abused by the congregants, as opposed to the president. So I think that that is a definition of svara. It's a question. Like the rabbanut in Israel, rabbis there have svara. They have powers of kfiya. In other words, they can control things that you want access to and you can't get. But I'm not sure that the American pulpit rabbi. What's that? Well, srara means that sibor is mamana you.
Oh, not that
person. You know, som tasim alach hamelach, right? Mano timane, it means it's a minui. Someone's appointed. Right? Listen, you can say, if a ger is a multi-billionaire, and all the various individuals in the community, rabbanim and community lay professionals come at his door knocking and asking for money, so he's a pretty powerful person, but that is... You know, you don't get much bigger svara than that one sense, but that's not a mean one. Right? Nobody, you know, we don't say that someone who's not allowed to svara is not allowed to be wealthy. So, anyway, but the definition, the Gemara says, why, what's the svara about? The Gemara answers, they have power of kfiya. Right? You can be mashkin, you can take away his silverware because he's not giving you the cash, right?
Would a sort of guy in America who technically does not have the ability to force it up,
I don't think so. I also, again, because a dayan has no powers of kfiya. Until, see, one of the things that I think ameliorates it, again, in Eretz Yisrael, for sure it's srara. Here, until you agree to go to that dayan and sign an agreement, you're not mechuyif to go. First, you're not mechuyif to go to that beis din anyway. And no beis din. You can always say, I know this is very problematic. You can say, I don't want to go to this beis din, I'm going to go to a different beis din. The point is, in order, if you decide to go to that beis din, then that's kibbalele. Right? If you want to ask a ger, if the two of you agree to ask a ger to be done your case, then they can do so. It has to be a communal appointment. You know, the challenge with the rabbi is what power of kfiya does he actually have? And so if he could get you thrown out of the shul, banned from the shul himself, you know, then that might constitute svara. If everything has to go through the board, then the rabbi is just an employee. And I don't see how the rabbi is that different. He may have a higher status, but that different than the executive director of the shul. So, anyway, the Gemara says, "Ini, is that true? You can be mamashke in someone in Erev Shabbos." This is not now the svara question. This just is, you're allowed to be mamashke in Erev Shabbos. The Rebbeinu Shlom says that he's going to punish all those who oppress the Jewish people. The Amr of Yitzchak by Shmuel bar Martir and Shvei the Rabbah, filu al gabay tzedakah, even the gabay tzedakah who oppressed the people. And you can imagine what happened here really was. that they took money from people they weren't supposed to take. They forced people to give, you know, who really couldn't afford to give that. And that's what the Gemara says. Lokasha hada amin hada amin. It depends whether the guy that he's forcing, he's taking a mashkil from, is wealthy or not wealthy. If he's not wealthy, so then that's ufakad fi al kolo chatzav. If he is wealthy, then that's the mashkil not stuck off the bear of Shabbos. And the Gemara says, tihad the Rava achpi and Rav Nassan bar Ami v'shachem ene arba mezuz tzedaka. Rava forced Rav Nassan bar Ami to give 400 zuz tzedaka. So Tosis here has a kasha based upon a Gemara in Perakal Abasa, a very wild Gemara. It's in the strangest of all places. It's in the sugya that deals with udders, chal. And one of the Amoraim went to Bavel, and in a town where the minhag was not to eat the udders, and they threw them all outside the town, and he was eating it Erev Yom Kippur. He had a feast of udder meat, and then they brought him in front of the Amora who lived in the town, said, "Why are you doing that?" And he had a teretz for everything, and he started asking kashas against them, and then that Amora finally said, "I see you're pretty sharp." He said, "You haven't seen anything. Come to my place, I'll show you people are sharp." And one of the things that happened there is he saw that the guy, the Amora, I forget who it was forcing a guy to do Ksibir Ava'im, to do something Kibir Ava'im. He was enforcing Kibir Ava'im. So he said, "You're not supposed to enforce, you don't enforce," he said the following. He said, "Kol mitzvah," who was it? It's on Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. Rami Bar Tamri and Rami Bar Dikule happened to visit Sura, and they brought him in front of Rav Chisda. And so he saw that they were forcing this guy to do Kibbutz Ava'im, and he said, "Leave him alone. It says, Kol mitzvah saseh shematan schar betzida ein beis din shematan musharan aleha." Any mitzvah where the Torah explicitly records the schar, based on it's not mitzvah, and to enforce it. So by kibbutz aveim, it says leman yarichun yamecha leman yitavloch, and therefore you're not mechuyev to. So Tosis asks, "Oh, but by tzedaka it says kibbutz glal hadavar zeh yivarcha Hashem elokecha v'chol masecha v'chol mishlach yadecha." So it's a mitzvah shematan Torah schar ksuva betzida. So why was Rava forcing? So Tosis has four answers here. One is that he didn't actually force him; he just used moral suasion. He pestered him a little bit, but he didn't actually force him. Second teretz is, this may not be in order, is that that's only kibbutz ava'im, which is a mitzvah asay, but tzedakah is both an asay and a lav. Lo sametus l'chava, lo sik potus yadcha, and since there's a lav, we're koven on it. A third teretz is that based on not nenashim on it. They're not punishable for it, but it doesn't mean that they're actually not allowed to do it. And finally, he suggests maybe they had been the minhag of the tzibur, they accepted upon themselves that you could be kofen al tzedakah. And we just said that Rashan ben Yair, you know, lahasnos and lahasi al kitzasan and so on, so they could actually make such a takan. Okay. Suffice it to say that I think the minhag of tzedakah, the minhag Yisrael, at least historically, is that we are kofen al tzedakah. We are ma'asan al tzedakah. Gemara continues. V'maskilim yashilu kizohar harakia. They quote a pasuk from the book of Daniel near the end. Ze dayan shadon din emes la'amito. That's a judge, a dayan who judges a din emes la'amito. True to its truth. So the question is, what does that mean? What some people judge which is not emes la'amito, it's sheker. So the answer is no. This is what Tosis references, a din meruma. If you're a dayan and you have a court case comes in front of you, and the guy brings edim, and the edim check out, they can answer every question, and you can't shake their testimony, but something is fishy, so you can't rule against them, but you have to be masalik yad. If you suspect that there's something fishy going on, it's a din meruma, you withdraw. Because you can't say, "Oh, look, the edim checked out, it's not my achrayus. If I'm going to pass it based upon the edim, and if they lied, the Rav Shalom will punish them, not me." The answer is no. As a dayan, if you have a strong suspicion, it's a dimeruma, so you're misalik yadai. So the first pasuk is dayan shadanem islamito. And then the second half of the pasuk is dariyel uzumatzike harabim kechofavim le'olam. Those who are matzik the rabbim will be shine like the stars forever. Elu gabay tzedaka. Those are the gabay tzedaka. It's a tremendous mitzvah to be a gabay tzedaka. No one wants to be the gabay tzedaka, presumably, because you have to pester people. It's not fun to pester people. But it's a big zuchus. And the Gemara will say more on this in a moment. Then the Gemara says, "Ika b'masnisa tana v'maskilim yasira kazar akia zedayin shadana mislamito v'gabayit tzedaka." And then umatzike a rabbin kechochavim liolam vaed elu malamde tinokos. They're the malamdim. Kigon man amarav kigon rashmo bar shilas. Rashmo shilas was the paradigm of an excellent mechanech. And the next story is very hard to read, and the Mishnah don't really fully explain it, but I'll explain what I think the Gemara actually means. Kiha, the Rav Ashkechel Rashmo Bar Shilas, he found Rashmo Bar Shilas. Now, it's not clear from the story, but I think what happens means is that the kids are in the room, in the classroom, and he's in the garden doing something. So, Amar Leishav Kasei Lehem Anusach, have you abandoned your faithfulness to your chinuch mission? You're not with what you're doing, she's doing. Amar Le, he said to him, love, no. Hotlisar Shnin de Lochazili, and this is what's very weird. I think it means you haven't seen me in 13 years. Mahashtanami datai lavayim. Knows you've never seen me do anything like this, not be with them in 13 years. And yet, I'm still, even though I'm in the next room, I'm still paying attention to them. I'm still, no, I know what's going on. It's very weird because it sounds like this is 13 years. The Chaz Yali, that they weren't seen to me, but he's been out of the profession for 13 years. So I think it means that no one would have seen me not with them for 13 years. And even right now, when I'm standing next room, I'm paying attention to what's going on. I know exactly what's going on. So Ram established him as the kind of paradigmatic teacher, faithful to his charge. Okay. Rabbanan Mai, okay, so if this is what the Gabayit Staka and the Dain Shadana Islamito and the Melamde Tinokos, what would be the reward of the Chachamim? That's soon to be even greater. Amar Ravina, Va'oavav, Kitzei Sashem Eshbek V'Varsa. That's not actually from Daniel, that's the last line in Shiras Tavara. So it's like Kitzei Sashem Esh. So Tosus talks about how each one of these things shines more than the other. The Zohar Harakia, the Kohavim, but the Shemesh apparently is the Shemesh of Sheshes Nebracious. The sun. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. Tan Rabbanan, Gabayit Staka and Rashaim Lifer Zebizah. You have Gabayit Staka. There are, let me state by Hakdamah to this section of the Gemara. There are two things that we are obligated to do in terms of Gabayit Staka. People who are in charge of communal finances, because we've had one too many scandals and irresponsibilities in various institutions of the community, no names shall be mentioned, but many of them should be obvious, of lax financial controls. There are two things that are essential. Number one, is there need to be proper financial controls so people won't be tempted to make a mistake. And number two, there has to be also the appearances of propriety. It's not okay, even if one is being honest, to not have transparency because people are going to suspect. And that's enough. There's a Mishnah in Shkalim that says that when the Kohen would go in to take the Trumas Alishka, he wasn't allowed to have pockets and hems and things like that. Why? The Mishnah says because maybe he would become wealthy and the people would say, oh, he became wealthy because he stole from the Trumas Alishka. Or maybe he would become poor and people would say that he became poor because he stole from the Trumas Alishka and was punished, which parenthetically goes to show you, no matter what you do as a communal leader, they'll always find a way to turn it against you. But the Mishnah says this is an obligation. Yeah, you smile, Pearl, because you come from a family like this, you know. Right? You're not allowed to do things that cast aspersions upon yourself. You have to not only be honest, you also have to give the appearances of being honest. So two gabayim who are working, they're not allowed to separate if they can't see each other, if they're not within sight, because people will suspect, you know what, they're pocketing money, because the other guy doesn't see him. The purpose of having two people, I know this is different than earlier. In other words, they're neman in principle, but people don't see it that way. People see it and say, look, two people, yeah, because you can't trust one without the other. Oh, they, you know, this one went into this store, that went to that store to collect. He's pocketing some of the money. So they're not allowed. If they can see one another, but one they're in different spaces, that's okay. Motza ma'os bashok. If one of them finds money, hefker, in the shuk, lo yitnei b'sel kisa. He shouldn't put it into his own wallet. When you come home, you take it because it's your money. But if people see you holding money and you're the tzedakah collector with the pushka here, and they see you take it, well, put money in there, everybody's going to think you're stealing the money from tzedakah. So you put it into the tzedakah pushka, you come home, you take it out. I'm sorry. If someone owed you money, upro bashuk, you're going around collecting tzedakah, and the guy says, oh, by the way, here's the money that I owe from so-and-so, unrelated to tzedakah. Again, it's your money, but if you put it in your wallet, people are going to think that you're stealing from tzedakah. So therefore, le'yin el-sol kiso el-anostol l'toch arneki shol tzedakah, uch'shiyav le'beiso yitlein. Turn to Rabbanon. Gabay tzedakah she'im lehem aniyim l'chalek, portin l'acher ve'im portin le'atzman. If gabay tzedakah collected for the kupa, cash, and the cash was coins, and apparently the prutas and the choshes would be machlidos, they would rust, they would oxidize, and somehow that would make them worth less. So it's more advantageous to convert them into silver. So you have to do a cheshbon, you calculate out, you know, the certain number of prutas to a thing. But it's not appropriate for me, to take from my money, and I guess the assumption is, I don't know if this is true in Spain, in private, it's not appropriate for me to do the money changing. Better to get someone else. They will give me silver, I'll give them the prutas. Not to take the prutas and break it on my own money. Similarly, gabay tamchoy, they didn't have aniyim to give out the food to, so now you can't leave it like that because the food's going to rot. So mochen lacherim ve'mochen asman. You sell it to somebody else, you don't take the food yourself and give the money to tzedakah. It could be in both cases also, there is a, certainly by the food, there's a subjective how much it's worth. You can't make that cheshbon yourself. You have to find someone else who's unbiased. They're going to try to buy it as cheaply as you can. You're going to drive as hard a bargain as you can for tzedakah, and that's the right way to do it. Most shel tzedakah ein monad asam shtayim shtayim ela achas achas. When you count the bills, you don't count them in twos, you count them one at a time. I believe this is just a question of good accounting practices, that when you're counting, there's a danger when you're doing it that way that you're going to miscount. Or the concern is that people see you and they think that you're taking more than you're supposed to take. That's what Rashi says.
What does that mean?
In other words, they'll see you count that you take two coins at a time. You want to do them in pairs. One, two, and people are going to say that you're counting the tzedakah, and you're going to wind up a number which is actually less than the real tzedakah there, and then you'll hand over only that amount to the, you know, to wherever you're handing it over. So people are going to look. So if you take two coins, one, two, people are going to think that you're stealing, that you're purposely trying to come up with a count that's less than the real value.
And
then when you only hand over, you know, I counted 50 pairs, but I had over 50 singles because you saw me count over 50. So really what you're counting is if you find it easy to count in twos or fives or something like that, but they don't realize that. Okay, it tells you, by the way, that people were very suspicious for a good reason, unfortunately. Okay, Amar Abaye, may Reish lo have a Yosef Mar at Sifei de Beit Nishna. The master, Rabba, did not sit on the mats in the Beis HaKnesses. It's interesting, the way Rashi says, Mach Tzalos, or the Tzifei, what is the furniture of a Beis HaKnesses supposed to be? It's one of my favorite Rambams. The Rambam writes something that I'm not sure if he was aware of the irony, maybe he was. The Rambam says in Hilchos Tefillah, when he talks about Beis HaKnesses, that in the lands of Sfarad and Shinar and Bavel, and if you get the fourth, all Sephardic lands, they would sit on mach tzalaos. And in Arei Edom, in Christian lands, they would sit in kisaos, in pews. So it meant Jews in Muslim lands sat, prayed on mats on the ground, and Jews in Christian lands sat in pews. I wonder why that is. I mean, the real answer is because when you go into your local house of worship furniture store in Sephardic lands, in Islamic lands, they were selling prayer mats. And in Eretz Yisrael, they were selling, you know, kibbutz lavi pews. That's why, you know, it's like, why do I wear this suit? The answer is because I go into the suits to the clothing store, and that's what they sell. So that's why I buy it. Anyway, but here it seems that you have prayer mats might have been the earlier version. You don't have chairs in shul, which obviously makes life simpler in a shul. Originally Rabba wouldn't sit on them because he thought that they were not, it was not proper. They spent stuff upon it that you weren't allowed to spend on it, and therefore it was gezel. Because when you use communal funds or communal property in a way that is usher to use, that's a violation of gezel. So, but then, Kevan the Shema Lahadatani, the Shanos Lachabashut. So when he heard the Brisa earlier, he said, oh, if they're allowed to be Mishanah, the Tzibor has the right to do that, so they could take the funds, whatever they were given for, and it was from the Rashi, from the Kupa, but you're allowed to use it. Again, that's not Rabbi Natan. You could use it for the mats in the shul. Amar Abaye, Mere Shava Avid Mar, Trekise, Chad Laniyad Amav, Chad Laniyad Masa. Originally, Rabbi used to keep two separate pushkas, one for the local aniyim, one for the broader aniyim. Kevin the Shama Lahadam and Shmuel Rav Tachlif Ardimi, Abitchad Kisa. So Shmuel told Rav Tachlif Ardimi, it's enough to make one purse. You don't need to have more stuff around. The Asniel, I make it tonight. When people give, it's understand that they understand that they're going to give, you're appealing for this. But if it turns out later you need more funds for the other, that's okay to be Mishana. So Abit, so Ihunami, Rabba also then, Abitchad Kisa, Asniel. And Ravashi says, Ravashi, Amarana, Asniel Ami Lo Tzrichana, Tzrichana. I don't even have to make it tonight. The Chodokasi Adati Didiyasi. When they give it to me, they understand. It's like the rabbi's discretionary fund. When you give to the rabbi's discretionary fund, it's understood that you're trusting the rabbi's discretion of how the money should be distributed. Okay. I once gave a shir, a shul, and I received an honorarium. It was made up from the rabbi's discretionary fund. So I said to my wife, I said, I'm a little concerned about this, you know. I mean, I don't presume the money in there is for... I was naive at the time, you know. The money is, you know, I'm not a tzedakah case. But my wife said to me, no, very often the rabbi could also have used it as a holding fund. Someone was giving money for scholarships. What do you do with it? Put it in the rabbi's discretionary fund, he'll make out the check. But a rabbi's discretionary fund, generally speaking, the rabbi, again, the shul should have very clear guidelines. It should be understood when people give. But when you say it's a discretionary fund, it means the rabbi has discretion as to what to use it for. Obviously, tickets to a Yankee game, chas v'shalom, are probably not what Balabas had in mind when he gave money to the rabbi. But, you know, there could be a very broad range of communal needs. What's that?
If you're using the discretionary fund to get those, you do it.
Okay. You'll explain to us another time. Okay. So the Ravashi says it's a rabbi. He's the rabbi, and the rabbi's discretionary fund. And I give it to whomever I want. Doesn't mean he gives it, you know, to his friends. It means that he gives it to what he sees as a need, where the need is. Hanu trei tabachim, the avde inyana bahade adadi. There was an arrangement made. The tabachim made a deal that each day one person got a day on which to slaughter and sell, or they alternated days. And then the deal was the chol man da avid biyom adachavrei. Anybody who shechs an animal on the day that his friend's entitled to shech, nikra'u lamashche, they'll tear the hide of his animal, which is tremendous, because one of the very valuable things after you shech an animal, aside from selling the meat, was the hide itself. So what happens? One of them went, and he did it on a day it wasn't his. Karu lamashche, it sounds like it wasn't just two people. The other tabachim tore his hides from that day. Asu lakami the rabbi, they came in front of the rabbi, he wanted them to pay him for the hide. Chayvinu, he was mechayv them. Chayvinu Rava l'shalume. So the Gemara says, "Eisvei Rav Yemi bar Shlomi l'Rava u'lahasiya al kitzasim." That was the brisa on Chasam Beis that the Bnei Yehuda can institute knasos. So lo ahadar le Rava. Rava didn't say a word. He didn't respond. Amar Papa Shaper Avid lo ahadar le Midi. Rava was not right not to respond to Rav Yemi bar Shlomi's question. Honey, because it was obvious. Honey, Midi heichad lekadam chashav al heichad ikadam chashav. Love called Kiminai Damasi. The way most Rishonim read the Gemara, and Rabbeinu Gershon's first shot as well, is that if you cannot mimasiyat titzasan if there's an Adam Chashuv in the ear unless you consult with him. Adam Chashuv doesn't necessarily have to be a Talmud Chacham, but it's someone, I think the pshat is someone whose opinion, someone who is wise and knows what appropriate kinds of takanos are. And if he gives his approval, then takan is binding. If there's no Adam Chashuv, so then the agreement of the artisans of the group of the guild is actually binding. Rabbeinu Gershon quotes a second shot, which is very interesting, which is based upon a sugya in Bava Kamma, where the Ovid in Ishdina Lanashe is a person allowed to enforce justice themselves. In other words, there are different kinds of examples, but you know the original story is: let's say you're coming to take something my property, and I tell you get off, and you don't listen. Can I take in my baseball bat and beat the living daylights out of you until you cease and desist? Or if you have money of mine and you won't give it back, can I just take from you? There's a simon. I think it's simon dalet in Chosher Mishpat that deals with this. It's a sugya in Bava Kamma, I believe, in the beginning of the third parak, around Chav Chesem Abez or something like that. So Rabbeinu Gershom suggests that that what's going on is Avin Nishdin and Ashe when they tear the hide. And if there's no Adam Chashuv, it means there's no one to go to, and therefore you have to be Avin Nishdin and Ashe. But if there's an Adam Chashuv, so then you have to go to Adam Chashuv. You can't do Avad Nishin and Ashe when you have alternative recourse. He doesn't say, he just quotes this idea. He doesn't say anything about it. I'm not sure that this is his second Mishnah. I'm not sure the one he likes. The reason I think it's problematic is because the Gemara in Bava Kamma, and that Sugya says, everybody agrees that if you have no recourse, there's a machlokas to think Rav Nachman and Rav Yehuda. Let's say you do have recourse. I could go to Beis Din, but I don't want all the trouble. I'd waste my time having to do that, even if I'm going to win my case. Rav Yehuda says you have to go to Beis Din. And Rav Nachman, who's the dayan who probably wants to clear his backlog, what I mean by that is he understood that it's easier to have disputes resolved outside of Beis Din. So Rav Nachman said, no, even when you could go to Beis Din, nonetheless, it's Aved Inishtim and Afshay, whatever the parameters of that. So if that's the case, then certainly this Gemara, if that's the parish of this Gemara, it would only be like Rav Yehuda. It wouldn't be like Rav Nachman. We passed him like Rav Nachman. Okay. Fine. The Gemara continues. One more. I'll read one more line, and I'm going to stop with that. Tana Rabbanan, a mechashrim bitztaka and gabayit tztaka, velo behekte shema gizbar. You don't ask the gabayim, and this is going to sound strange to you. And the Rama, I believe, in Shal the Torah writes, I think the Rama, I'm pretty sure it's the Torah, and then the Rama quotes it, even though technically speaking, you don't have to, it's a good idea. Even though you can't force them, it's a very good idea to have as gabay tzedakah to give a full cheshbon. It's absolutely correct. It says, v'lo yichashri, so the Gemara says, af vishen raya l'davar, zeicha l'davar. There is a hint to the fact that you're not machashri. If you don't ask them to give a penny-by-penny accounting, shenemar, v'lo yichashri es anashim, ha-sheitner es ha-kesev ha-yadam, l'aseis l'aseh ha-malcha, kiva emunah he-mosim. Now, it's not a raya, because maybe those people in Vayis Rishon and Mikdash were tzaddikim. But if you have people who are very reliable people, part of the issue is you don't want them to feel that they're always under the microscope. But good communal practice is, of course, the Gabbai Tzedaka understands that he should give a proper cheshbon. And the truth is, it's better for the Gabbai Tzedaka, both to remove it from chashad, and because it means that he's less likely to engage in shenanigans, because he knows he has to give a cheshbon. So Medina, you really don't. Lo yichashu asan Hashem, but nonetheless, it is a very good practice that the Gabbai Tzedaka, he shouldn't need the tzibur to demand the cheshbon. He should actually give a cheshbon. It's a very powerful medrash rabbah. Moshe Rabbeinu, at the beginning of Parshas Pekudei, gives Eile Pekudei HaMishkan Mishkan Ha'idus HaShem Pukar HaPi Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't Mechuyah, but he said, you know, the Jewish people are going to suspect me, claim that I was pocketing the money, and therefore I'm going to give them a full cheshbon of what's going on. And then the story goes, Moshe Rabbeinu was counting the silver, and most of the silver was used in the Adonim, in the sockets for the Mishkan. And Moshe Rabbeinu cheshbon that out, that was the majority of the tzedakah, and the only silver that they had was the silver from the Machtes HaShekel. But if 600,000 Machtes HaShekelim were used for the 100 Adonim, if you work it out, Kikar La'adan. But then, remember, there were more than 600,000 people in the census. There was 603,000, I cannot, what's that? And so Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't figure out what happened to the small amount of shkalim, and he panicked. Like, they're going to accuse me of being a thief. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Meir Zeinayim, and the Bali Kriya here will respect this. The Pasuk says, V'yesho'elef u'shvameyel samichami shavashivim. It's like a very dramatic thing. Moshe Rabbeinu looked up, and he saw the Amudim of the Mishkan. He saw the silver things around. He stole them. He gave a full cheshbon, and he almost made a mistake. He was terrified, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved him. So communal institutions need to have absolute transparency in their finances. It's a major, major problem. Okay.